politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew for our life, liberty, property, and civilization, and all that is in between here at CR Podcast. This is your host, Daniel Horowitz, back here today for Monday, a brand new week, March 18th. And it truly is a decision of whether we will be a nation of civilized human beings or of Haitian cannibals, Venezuelan gangbangers, and Hezbollah. We started off the week of the original first half of the budget sellout with the murder of Laken Riley at the hands of a Venezuelan gangbanger that was paroled into this country by Biden. And now we're starting out this week, which is going to be the week where, if we don't change up our game, Republicans will sell us out on the final tranche of government funding, which includes the Department of Homeland Security. We're starting out the week as Border Patrol catch a likely Hezbollah Iranian Lebanese agent, as well as, of course, this case of a Haitian rapist, one of 133,000 Haitians flown into the country illegally. Yet we're not even talking about this. Republicans are quietly selling us out in the budget. This stuff is occurring when Republicans could message it, harness the power of a government shutdown to focus on a 90-10 winning issue that really we have to win if we're going to survive. But instead, we're talking about bloodbath. Okay, so this is going to be the news of the day. The media accusing Trump of calling for a physical bloodbath if he doesn't win the election. And obviously, conservative media defending him. He just meant we're going to suffer a political bloodbath at the hands of Biden's policies. The reality is the political bloodbath is happening now. It's been occurring. It occurred 4 years ago this week with the rise of the Fourth Reich. And this is what happens when you're not steering the messaging, when you're not leading, when you're not harnessing your influence over where Republicans control the government to actually make a difference. So, for example, I don't blame Trump for anything he said at that Ohio rally. I mean, he dumped on Ron DeSantis and compared him to ISIS, which is a little bit bizarre if you're trying to unify the party and win. But whatevs, I guess unity is always a one-way street. But, you know, when he mentioned the bloodbath thing, look, the media is going to take anything out of context, even if you have a more articulate on-message leader. I perfectly understand that. But here's where the Trump supporters don't or can't see past, his rear end. And that is, if he were driving a government shutdown narrative with DHS appropriations and demanding that Mike Johnson not agree to any border bill that does not attach to it HR 2 and state-based enforcement, that would be a much bigger issue, and you wouldn't be talking about this. This is the point. Sometimes it'll be his fault. Sometimes it won't be his fault. But this is what the narrative is going to be. You either drive the narrative or you get driven by it. So when you're not pushing for a substantive fight, the media is going to make it about a clown show. Sometimes Trump will help contribute, sometimes not. But I want to give you a sense of what should be the messaging, but it's not occurring. And again, I want to remind you, it's not like, Trump has no power. He's not president yet. He is in charge of the Republican Party image-wise, mechanically, fundraising through the RNC, through endorsements, through Mike Johnson, more than any incumbent Republican president has been. So you can't compare him to a typical candidate who's the presumptive nominee. Okay, if you have a beef with the Republicans right now, you got to take it to the top. It doesn't make sense to continue for years on end, I hate Republicans, we need Trump, when you already have Trump. You see what I mean? You might not have Trump for president, but what you do have is any area where the GOP has influence, the House budget fight, down the ballot primaries and endorsements, state legislative sessions. Take your fight to the man at the top, and he is supporting the budget sellout. I'm sorry to tell you that. So I want to get to through that, talk about what the federal messaging should be on the border, on other issues, on the garbage we've let into the country and how to win the suburban vote on that. And then get back to state-based issues with some state legislatures finishing up their sessions, most of them with nothing to show for it. So while we get sold out at the federal House budget level, we're getting sold out in the red states. So don't think, oh, you know, we just need to win another 10 House seats and we'll be good, because we have 80-20 majorities in a lot of these states and do nothing with it, or sometimes negative. But first, one thing you can do to influence, we talk a lot about making red states red. How about keeping red families red? Okay, this starts off with your own family. How many of us send our kids away to college or other schools, and our kids do not follow in our footsteps? That's how we lose America, one family at a time. You might not control a county, a state, or Congress, but you should influence your own family. And, you know, obviously it all begins with education. Kids do not understand what it's like to be an American, heck, what it's like to be a man or a woman. And this is why I recommend Hillsdale College. By going to hillsdale.edu/Daniel to enroll, you might think, well, I don't know, I don't have the money or ability to send my kids to Hillsdale. No, no, no. I'm talking about you can do this right now, regardless of the age of your kid, or if he's going concurrently to another college or a job or trade school or anything else. They're giving online classes now, a series of 40 free, 100% free online courses. You can learn everything from the works of C.S. Lewis to obviously biblical studies in the U.S. Constitution. I particularly recommend the Constitution 101, the meaning and history of the U.S. Constitution. In this 12-lecture course, you'll explore the design and purpose of the Constitution, the challenges it faced, and how it has been undermined. So, folks, if you're looking to indoctrinate your kids into something of value, this is literally free. It's online. It's unbelievable. So I'm going to enroll my 14-year-old. He's turning 14. It's never too early. So go right now to hillsdale.edu/Daniel to enroll. There's no cost. Easy to get started at hillsdale.edu/Daniel. So this should be the biggest story. This should be what Trump is pushing. This should be what Johnson is pushing. This should be what every MAGA person is pushing, that we will not fund the invasion. So this is from the New York Post. A Lebanese migrant who was caught sneaking over the border admitted he is a member of Hezbollah. He hoped to make a bomb, and his destination was New York. Basel Abadi, 22-year-old dude, was caught by Border Patrol on March 9th near El Paso. And while he was in custody, he admitted to trying to make a bomb. He later claimed he was trying to flee Lebanon and Hamas because he didn't want to kill people. But once you're in it, you never get out, he said. And he said he trained with the Hezbollah for 7 years. He was able to get to Costa Rica, Panama, flew in through Ecuador. We talked about this a lot, that route. So yeah, this is where we are. So I don't understand how you cannot prosecute a budget fight over this coming into the country. And I want to note that this is not an aberration. Okay? The Daily Mail has an amazing article that really captures a lot of what we've been talking about with Joseph Heumeier over the years of how Venezuela is our own Syria. That it's not just we have an invasion of you know, millions of people. It's that we're bringing in from the worst cultures, the worst countries, the most violent cultures, and also the countries that pose the greatest strategic national security threat. Axis of terror in America's backyard, fears of political killings on U.S. soil as Venezuela morphs into an assassin's gateway with army of Iranians keen to commit atrocities in the United States as FBI hunts hitmen plotting to kill former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Last week, the FBI Miami launched a manhunt to find Iranian spy Majid Destaghi Farhani, who the government accuses of looking for allies to kill U.S. officials while operating from Venezuela. So Iran is operating in Venezuela with Hezbollah, and they're looking for allies, foot soldiers within the U.S., to carry out assassinations on our soil. And it just happens to be that that is the source country from which we are bringing in the largest share of migrants. So you have your biggest strategic enemy, Iran, gets a foothold in Venezuela, and we decide to let in over a million Venezuelans. I want you to think of the amount of opportunities they have to screw us over. Meanwhile, four Iranians were charged in 2021 for plotting to kidnap dissident journalist Masheed Al-Najad from Brooklyn before using a speedboat to take her to Tehran via Caracas. The FBI said the Iranian agents planned to lure Al-Najad, an American citizen, from her home in Brooklyn to Venezuela, where they would capture her and bring her back to Iran. The Iranians had a live feed of her home, and research had to get the author out of New York. One of the four researched a service offering military-style speedboats for self-operated maritime evacuations out of New York City. Conspirators who remain at large, to this day, so we know who they are, had also plotted to lure a person in the UK and three others in Canada to Iran. So this is the new thing, that we go and let in a Trojan horse to this country. Okay? We let in a Trojan horse, not just 5, 10, 15, but in the millions, from the countries that pose the greatest strategic threat. We talked about the Tren de Aragua gang. So it's the street crime, it's the brutality, attacking cops, and then Hezbollah. Tren de Aragua, Hezbollah. Oh, and then we're not done. We have Haiti with the cannibals. We brought in a lot more than this, but 133,000 just on Biden's fake, his illegal CHNV parole program, where he flew in 133,000 of these dudes. DHS has now confirmed, according to Fox's Bill Malusion, that the Haitian child rapist that was we talked about on Friday did indeed enter through this parole program, and he was screened and vetted on multiple databases and had no derogatory information available. Oh, gee, in Haiti, we don't have that information available. Wow, who would have known? Yeah, we picked the biggest dung holes in the world. And by the way, just so you know, here's the deal. It's not just the fact that, oh, you know, we don't have good information sharing from these backwater countries. It's that even if we did, a lot of them genuinely would have nothing derogatory on their record. They're first timers. Meaning, it's not just a problem of, oh, we're bringing in known terrorist operatives, which we clearly are. It's that we're bringing in millions of people from the most degenerate culture you could ever imagine. Violence is pervasive. So whether they officially have a paper trail of it or not, you bring in hundreds of thousands of these people, well, you're going to be bringing in a lot of that, whether they've done it before or have a record of doing that or not. This is the message that Republicans should be saying. Is it too much to ask that we ensure before we fund DHS that we don't bring in Tren de Aragua and Hezbollah and the Haitian cannibals? Is that too much to ask? So here's where things stand on the budget bill. Republicans funded half the government. I mean, half the agencies. It's only 30% of the appropriations. The other 70 is this week. Now, there's six bills. Okay, six of them. Five out of the six, there's no disagreement whatsoever. And they've already wrapped them up. Now, they disagree over DHS because they don't want to... They have to show us that they're fighting for something on DHS. So originally, they were going to do just a full year CR rather than a new appropriation just for DHS. But then they had the problem. You see, but then you'd get an automatic 1% cut. Remember that? If you don't pass a new appropriation pursuant to last year's debt ceiling bill, you'd suffer this 1% automatic cut, which of course Republicans cannot cut 1%, right? You know, we have inflation, but then they don't want to cut anything. So now they're in a logjam. But again, it's not over HR 2 and state enforcement and we will not fund the invasion. It's over, it's random stuff. Like Republicans were totally going to agree to it. Biden now senses that Republicans so badly don't want a government shutdown, he's trying to milk them for more extraneous stuff. So he wants more flexibility in how to spend DHS funding. Meaning, it's not that they're not arguing over, oh, Republicans are holding it up. You might see headlines, oh, you know, there's a holdup in the DHS appropriation bill. You might think, oh, Republicans are fighting. No, they're not. It's actually Biden wants more flexibility in how to spend certain accounts, meaning just to move people around into the country. And also just some sort of grift for the TSA unions to give the TSA jerks more benefits. That's kind of what he's holding out for. You know, TSA is funded under the DHS bill. So that's all it is. There is no disagreement. And again, I'm sorry, but Trump controls the direction of the big ticket items, like where the House is going to stand on appropriations. He may as well be president in that regard. And he supports it. Oh, the other point was, remember the fighting over UNRWA funding? So again, the issue is not UNRWA. The issue is funding the so-called Palestinians, funding terrorism. Whether you do it through UNRWA or not, it's a problem. So UNRWA has gotten such a bad rap because of their participation in October 7th. So from what I'm hearing, Democrats agreed not to fund UNRWA, but only for like a year. Like put up a 1-year moratorium, but they're just going to funnel it through other programs. In other words, the PLO funding is not going to be cut one iota. So that's essentially where we are on the budget. But nothing has changed. Is it so hard to give over to the American people that this is the sort of garbage we are letting into the country? And by the way, speaking of garbage let into the country, I want to play for you a minute clip, the creepiest thing in the world. Now, you're going to hear it, but you should look it up to watch it. I want you to watch the facial expressions of the ragheads that were sitting in the audience. So this is in Raleigh, North Carolina, at the city council. So I don't know what this has to do with the city council, but basically what's happening now is the Hamas Muslim Brotherhood AstroTurf they're going around to all these city councils and speaking about the, you know, how much they hate Jews and, you know, Israel and that sort of stuff. So that's what they're doing, even though it has nothing to do with the city council. And there's this, a college student looking girl dressed in some sort of Arab garb, a real ugly piece of garbage, really disgusting. And here is what she had to say about Arabs, Jews in Israel, and most importantly, about Americans and America itself. Take a listen right here.
2 minutes. What am I to do with all this time? Allow me to point out that you are supporting Israel solely for the reason that they look like you. Light hair, light eyes. We all know that the only people who successfully get to cry victim are people who look like that. Keep in mind that Israel is in the Middle East, where the population of surrounding countries look like me and a majority of the people in this room. Kind of makes you wonder, right? How did those people get there? The same way you all got here. Slaughtering natives, stealing land, and claiming it as your own. And one day, we will receive the same pitiful reparations and apologies that were given to the Native Americans, African Americans, Vietnamese, Holocaust victims, and the list goes on and on and on and on, because we continue to repeat history instead of learning from it. Do you mind? Thank you. I don't want apologies. I want preventative measures and empathy at the very least, but even that seems too much to ask for. Ceasefire now.
So folks, again, the audio doesn't even do it justice that, you know, that the young Arabs are taught that Jews are these blonde, blue-eyed colonizers who have no ancestral claim to Israel. And first off, you gotta, again, just Google, you know, Arab speech at Raleigh, North Carolina City Council, and you'll find, I think this was last week, in the audience, there's these, it's full of Arabs there, and there's these ugly women in the back. Every time she says something obnoxious about when she was saying, you know, look, people who look like you, just like you, you know, did to the Native Americans, they were snapping their fingers. It was just like some real creepy ritual. You know, usually if someone has a very, you know, someone gives a speech and everyone's very happy, they clap and they applaud. I don't know if it's some sort of Arab cultural thing. They're like snapping their fingers. And I'm just looking around and thinking, this is Raleigh, North Carolina. We have let this crap into our country in such large numbers you cannot even imagine. I've been warning about this for 15 years, but I think what we've seen, particularly since October 7th, is that they've now reached critical mass. I mean, they've had their Muslim Brotherhood, you know, student association, college operation, government operation for many, many years. But now they're doing it out in the open. You know, they used to be a little bit more careful, but they feel they've reached critical mass. And you watch the dripping hatred. And this is what I don't understand about people like Something That Rhymes with Tucker and this new fake reactionary right that thinks that they're enlightened and somehow nuanced by dumping on Israel and siding with Gaza in order to own the Jews. It's like, this is what you're siding with. You're stupid. I don't care what you think about Israel, Jews. You want to focus on it. You like them. You don't. I don't care. But if you think that this is going to stop with Israel, dude, it's here. I mean, you saw the dripping hatred. This is the thing. It's nothing to do with Israel. They hate America, even though they're here. It's like, they're like, you guys, light Jews, don't belong in ancestral Israel. Okay, well, then why do you belong in here? You know, what are you doing here? So go to Gaza. So you have a bunch of people that came to America because they were in a dunghole, and then they hate us. They hate our country. You cannot imagine. We've brought this in millions. This is a pervasive mentality. Pervasive. Among them. Okay? What you heard from that girl is pretty much the status quo opinion. And again, it's encouraged by all the Muslim infrastructure in this country. Their media, their education, their mosques. What do you think they do in their mosques all week? You know, when I go to services, it's not about politics. It's not even right wing, left wing, anything. About improving as a human being. That's not what goes on there. You know what I'm saying? When you see all these, there's certain organizations that are translating these, whatever they call their guys, imams, speeches in their mosques. It's not just what you see in the Middle East. This is happening in all 50 states. And the other important thing about that clip is you see it all gets back to race. Everything with the Marxists are about race. This is why I said the Palestinian cause has been the cause du jour of every left-wing cause, whether it's global warming, open borders, tranny stuff. It all gets back to, you'll find the so-called Palestinian dogma and paraphernalia at all these events because it all gets back to racism. They have a violent hatred towards white people. And that's where it merges. And again, this is why all these like pseudo-white nationalists even that are hating on Jews and Israel are so stupid. They're just dumb. Kissing up, oh, the Gaza civilians. Like that weenie gay argument about Gaza civilians of how you have to fight a war. I don't understand what their deal with that is, but they're stupid. But anyway, we got a big problem. Now, to be fair, we are finding people at the border from, you know, places like Lebanon, whatever. But keep in mind, most garbage like that, that girl was probably born here already. We've been letting it in for so long. But most of them came in through the legal system, which is insane. Eventually, we need states to take control over that too. But you got to walk before you run, and at least start with illegal immigration. And by the way, speaking of which, if you go to therealbordercrisis.com, it's one of our URLs, therealbordercrisis.com, use promo code border, you can get 30% off your entire Blaze TV Plus subscription, where you could watch what's called Blaze Originals, our deep dive. So we have another one out on Texas versus the feds, how the elites use the border crisis against us. And again, it 100% is about replacement, but go to therealbordercrisis.com, use promo code border for 30% off. So that's going to get you to under $100 for a full year of subscription. But anyway, we badly need states to push back. And look, you know, there's a reason why Trump was attacking DeSantis, you know, in his speech, because DeSantis is actually doing what he won't do. I don't know why we don't demand this of all the states. On Friday, he signed 3 immigration enforcement bills. One bill increases penalties for illegals who commit crimes in the state after already having been deported. So each degree of felony goes up 1 degree. So a third degree becomes second. Second becomes first. First turns into a life felony. So just by virtue of being there illegal, if you're picked up on a crime, it gets knocked up a degree. It also increases a second-degree misdemeanor to a first and a first-degree misdemeanor to a third-degree felony. So it goes even through that. And then another bill prevents local governments from validating community IDs for illegals. Again, we shouldn't have any jurisdiction. And by the way, I want to get to this. I don't have time today, but the Orlando Sentinel has a great article of how the state, I mean, they're lamenting it, how the state of Florida is just countermanding localities and controlling them. And again, we all things equal, I believe in local control. But if you control a red state, you need to shut down blue localities. And that's really the best state doing it. You know, it's not perfect. There's more that needs to be done. But, you know, you compare to other states, forget it. It's much better. And then the third bill increases penalties on those who drive without a valid driver's license. So, you know, that will make it a lot easier to hold these criminals. But again, why we're pretty much towards the end of the legislative sessions, you know, coming up on the final weeks here for a lot of states. And I don't know really any other state that's trying to tackle illegal immigration. It's unreal. You know, it's interesting. Last night, something that rhymes with Tucker was the keynote speaker at the Tarrant County GOP dinner in Fort Worth. And he blasted Greg Abbott. You know, right now, most are praising him. And he said, quote, "I don't understand how you can be governor of a state in 2020 and see the border open up and get invaded and not do anything about it." And he's absolutely right, because Abbott waited so long. We had to beg and push. And then it was always one or two levels, including now, of where it should be. It's always a cat and mouse game. It's always designed to evoke a positive response from conservative media or get them off his back, but not actually solve the problem. And Tucker's absolutely right. But here's the problem with Tucker. I don't understand how you can be governor of a state and see this happen, not do anything about it. I'll tell you, Tucker, how that happens. You see, it happens when you're under the umbrella of protection of Meta Trump, your God, your golden calf. And he, you see, something happened. We had two relatively well-known, well-funded candidates, Alan West and Don Huffines. I supported Huffines, but it doesn't matter. You know, we had him on the show a lot, 2022. He was up for re-election. You see, he never really feared losing, and he was right not to fear. You know why? because he got Trump's endorsement. Stop playing this double game. I'm sick of it. Oh, it's terrible. We have these terrible governors, these terrible endorsements. They keep winning the primaries. A look at Mike Johnson selling us out. Trump has controlled the Republican Party longer and with a greater depth of control than anyone since Abraham Lincoln. If you have a problem with today's Republican Party, take it up with the man. I don't understand this cognitive dissonance. Let's say Trump runs for, I mean, let's say God gives him life until 120 years. And he keeps running and losing every 4 years, you know, for the next 20 years. He continues to be the nominee. Is there going to be a statute of limitations where there's a time where finally it's like, well, he is part and parcel of the problem of the Republican Party? Or are we going to continue being, the GOP sucks, Trump controls the Republican Party, and Trump's amazing, we need Trump while he's controlling the party, and they're sucking with his blessing, with his endorsement? I don't get it. But anyway, I'm glad Tucker accidentally recognized something that I've been saying. That even though Trump's not involved in state legislation, but he is that invisible hand as to why we can't effectively pressure people like Abbott, Henry McMaster, and Kristi Noem into taking up any of this. I mean, the latter two haven't done a single thing on illegal immigration because they're under the umbrella of protection of Trump. So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the states as we focus on the federal sellout this week. We've been doing a lot of states, and I want to move over to Oklahoma, our next segment, and get to our next guest. So, folks, as we head and barrel towards this federal budget sellout from the GOP House, where do we have to go? Where do we have to turn? Well, as I've said very often, we have about 23, 25 states where we can run up the score. Everything you don't like, we should be redressing at the state level. Okay, I mean, maybe there's a few things, Biden's support for Hamas or, you know, doing nothing about the Houthis blocking our shipping lanes. That's a little bit tough at a state level. But almost everything else, the persecution of people for their political opinions, the invasion at the border. I mean, state interior enforcement, like we talked about in Florida, if we did that plus in all the red states, that would go a long way to deterring this. Obviously, when it comes to budget, it's a little bit of a knottier issue, budget and economy, but the currency bills are very, very important. Certainly the cultural stuff. Okay? There's a lot we can do. Healthcare, health freedom. You know, COVID kind of did happen 4 years ago. Where's the 13th Amendment, 14th Amendment level ferocity to fight tyranny like we had after slavery? Nothing. I mean, most states really have not done much. And I think Oklahoma's a classic example where there's an 81-20 majority in the House, 40-8 majority in the Senate, but we're not doing anything. And the reason why that's important is it's not just that, oh, you know, we have no angle at a federal level, so it's a dead end, we got to revert to the states. That's true. But it's also the fact that if you're not going to do it in a state like Oklahoma with these majorities where Democrats have not won at a presidential level, they've not won a single county within the state since 2000 or 2004, something like that. I mean, if you're not going to do it there, you're not going to do it anywhere. So I don't want to hear this business, oh, maybe in the best case scenario, if somehow we have a miracle and, you know, we get through their you know, ballot harvesting operation and we actually get a party on message and somehow win, okay, you squeeze out an extra 10 seats in the House, have a 52-48 rhino majority in the Senate there. I mean, somehow you're going to do anything with that if we're not going to do it here. And what caught my eye last week is that the man who's really been the conservative leader in Oklahoma for quite some time, finally, you know, towards the end of the session there in the Senate, was like, wait a minute, we haven't done anything. We haven't redressed any of the aforementioned issues. And if anything, what you're bringing to the floor is garbage. And he decided to filibuster their bills to draw attention to this. And I'm referring to our next guest, Nathan Dom. He is a state senator from the Tulsa area in Oklahoma. He's been there since 2012. So he is termed out. This will be his last term there. Basically, anything that's conservative in the state emanates from him. Also, recently, he has become the chairman of the state party as well. You can follow him at Nathan Dahm. That's D-A-H-M on Twitter. And he's with us in the flesh today. Hey, Nathan, it's really an honor to bring you here for the first time.
Well, it's my honor to be joining you. Thank you for the conservative voice that you've lent to all the things that are taking place across the country. There are good things. There are pockets of conservatism. There are, you know, conservative leaders that you have highlighted. But kind of as you mentioned or kind of led up to in your intro, it seems like there's not enough of us, even in these deep red states. And that's a problem that we need to address and correct. And by you bringing your voice to it, I think that does put more of a focus on it and pressures people to sometimes vote more conservative, even if they don't really have those credentials. But you obviously have the bona fides for that, and I appreciate everything that you're doing for the cause.
And certainly, I've mentioned you before because you have a lot of innovative legislation. You know, just so you know, when I'm looking for other ideas, I say, all right, what, you know, has Nathan introduced this in Oklahoma? So I want to get to some of that. But let's start off with your filibuster. Again, officially, there's a 40-8 Republican majority in the Senate. Describe what is, you know, kind of the basic gist of what has gone on there. You know, in Florida, the governor just signed 3 interior enforcement bills after having signed a bunch of them last session. So, you know, we're addressing some of the key issues. In Oklahoma, I have not seen any major win there so far. So describe the circumstances that led up to your filibuster. What bills are you upset about that have and have not come to the floor?
Well, and I will say this. We have a strongly conservative governor here in Oklahoma, but we have a supermajority Republican legislature, like you mentioned, that is actually constantly at war with him and undercutting him and working against him. It's mostly the Senate, I'll be honest with you, that the House has been working with the governor. I mean, for instance, our governor has been calling for tax cuts for years. The House passed tax cuts for years. And it was finally this year that the Senate was able to agree that, okay, we'll do one tax cut, but begrudgingly, you know, drag us across the finish line. We'll do a tax cut. And, you know, I mean, that's a core principle of Republicanism, not just conservatives, but the Republican Party is we're supposed to believe in lower taxes and limited government. But what we've seen this session, and the Republican Senate has been touting this openness and this transparency on the budget process. But what they're doing with this budget process is they want to spend an extra $1 billion, you know, above and beyond what we normally do because we are flush with cash. And so they're touting that. But at the same point in time, that means that for several weeks, we've been eligible to hear bills on the floor, including last week, which was a deadline week. Last week, every bill, Senate bill that wasn't heard by Thursday was dead in the water. You know, almost impossible to do anything with it. And on Thursday was our deadline, and Wednesday they took the whole day and did budget stuff. They talked about and voted on some things Wednesday morning, done by 11, and then the rest of the day they were talking about stuff that was for this week and the following week, like time that we could have spent on the floor working on good legislation first and foremost. But the other problem that I've seen throughout this time is that there's these Republicans that have this idea that, you know, if we spend the taxpayer money, or as they call it, government money, they don't realize that it's taxpayer money. If we spend it, then it's good. But they've taken a lot of the same ideas that Democrats pushed for, that Republicans opposed when Democrats were pushing it, and they've just repackaged it. And now that it's a Republican idea, it's good. No, it's still growing government. It's still not a core function of government. We're still not advocating for individual liberties. I did this once 2 years ago. I did a filibuster. And what I did is I read the entire U.S. Constitution on the Senate floor. Probably the first time any of them have heard the U.S. Constitution in its entirety, unfortunately. But I did that because they weren't hearing pro-life bills. And they actually ruled me as out of order because they said the Constitution was not germane to the subject at hand, which is, you know, amazing that they publicly admitted that they didn't think the Constitution had anything to do with their legislation. But lo and behold, the next day, the pro-life bills were first on the agenda. Now, I gave my pro-life bill to somebody else because I knew there was no way they were going to hear it with my name on it. They didn't want to give me a quote-unquote win. And I've told them for years, I don't care who runs the bill. I'll give my bill over to anybody else. It doesn't have to have my name on it. I care about the policy. I care about the principle. And so we were seeing them waste time and spend time on other things. There was numerous members that were not getting bills heard. Democrats were getting more bills heard than conservative Republicans.
Wow.
And on top of that, they flat out lied to me because I had asked them, I said, hey, you know, I have all these list of bills. Here's ones that are my priorities. Here's ones that are lesser priority.
Sure.
You know, where are we at? And I was told that several of my bills would be heard. And then come Wednesday night, they released the agenda for Thursday, the final deadline day. And I had one bill on the agenda. So, and it wasn't just the fact that I only had one bill, it's that I was lied to, that other members weren't getting their bills heard. There was all these different things. I went to them in good faith effort for weeks, talking to them about my legislation, about why it was good. And I mean, I'll tell you, so, honestly, some of this stuff was not life-changing legislation. But when you take all that combined, that they're hearing more Democrat bills, that they're growing government instead of hearing these bills, that they're spending money instead of hearing these, like all those things combined,
yep.
It was time to say, okay, they all need to have a reality check. We need to rein things back in and tell them that this is, if they're going to waste time on these other things, I'm going to at least spend the time reading the bills in their entirety, because for a lot of them, just like the first time they probably heard the Constitution, this is probably the first time they were aware of what was in the bill that they were going to be voting on. So that's why I felt like I needed to filibuster. And I'll tell you that this was just the start. We still have a lot more of session to go. And so if we don't realign some priorities in the Senate, then there continues to be that option and other options to make sure they're focusing on what is the core function of government, which under the Declaration, you know this as well as your listeners, is government is created to secure our rights. That should be our primary.
To secure our rights, and particularly at a time when the feds are crushing those rights, violating exactly. The essence of the social compact. So everything the feds should not be doing, they're doing, and everything they're supposed to do, which is literally, I mean, protect us from transnational terrorist gangs. I mean, all this stuff coming in, they're downright importing them. And, you know, this is a thing. I mean, we talked about Oklahoma last session. There are people that want to give driver's licenses to illegals, meaning not only not pass good interior enforcement, but to let this, you know, get even worse. So mm-hmm. What you're touching on is the core, I think, we're finding in a lot of these states, that they would rather play ball with the Dems because they don't want to conduct a vote on our bills. They don't want to do them, so therefore they don't want to have a vote on them. So the best thing is just to table them or ensure they don't even come up for a committee hearing. And, you know, a lot of people don't like kicking over tables, but I think what you're showing, we've seen this in South Carolina, a couple other states, that if you don't use the tactics of the rules of the Senate to force votes, then this is never going to change. So describe the fallout and where you are now with this filibuster. I know that the Senate pro temp, Greg Treat, called your actions terroristic. Are you seeing any change? And out of the 40 Republicans, could you give us a broad picture of how much support you're getting?
Sure. So, you know, I started in the morning with one bill that was 80-something pages, 83, 84 pages, and that took almost 2 hours. For me to read that in its entirety. And by the time I was done, they had all left and went down to lunch. And so it wasn't until we came back from lunch that I let some other bills go through and then kept talking and to them and being like, and asking, you know, okay, where are we at? Are things going to change? No. Okay. Well, I'll read another bill. And so we kept going back and forth on it. Now I will say initially in the morning, most of the members were very, very ticked off at me. I mean, some of them wouldn't even talk to me, wouldn't even look at me. You know, just utter disgust, you know, for me having the audacity to read the bill aloud. You know, I mean, they looked like, you know, like I had committed some act of terrorism, as the pro tem said. And I will say this with Greg Treat. No, he named myself and Dusty Devers by name. And then he said he doesn't negotiate with terrorists. And then later on, when a reporter asked him if he actually called us if he was intending to call us terrorists, then he backtracked and said, no, their actions are terroristic, which doesn't make it any better. What he's saying is that, you know, following the rules, reading the bills out loud, that's terroristic actions. And so I'm going to be releasing a statement on that this morning, pushing back on him for that. I mean, in the same interview, he was touting his leadership style. Well, I think that's a terrible leadership style, including all these other things, you know, not hearing conservative bills, not fighting for conservative causes,
yep.
Not pushing the Constitution, all those things. But towards the end of the day, a lot of people, you know, because myself and Senator Devers were able to have conversations with others about why we were doing what we were doing. And one of the things was to ask the simple question, should Democrats be getting more bills heard than Republicans? Is that something that you as a Republican would say, yeah, that makes sense?
Yep.
Well, of course not. But then, I mean, just in general, like that should be like, I'm sorry, but when you're the majority party and somebody else is the minority party, they do the same thing to us, right? Democrats had control of the state.
Look, I live in Maryland. You ain't going to find a legislative session where Republicans are in the driver's seat. But this is the hallmark of a lot of these red states that before we had these Freedom Caucuses in some of these states, and I wish you guys had that in Oklahoma, where you organize against it. I mean, you're kind of, you and Dusty Devers are doing this on your own. They're not going to change, and they have a very carefully orchestrated session designed to evince the image of a conservative, but ensure that nothing is really done on the critical issues of our time that people are concerned about. And like, I'm looking down the list of your bills. I mean, some really good ones. Obviously, you have creating a Oklahoma State Guard, which is something we need. You have a constitutional amendment, which I find is interesting to maybe replicate in other states, requiring the legislature to create mission statements for state agencies, to create measurable goals. So, you know, what exactly could a Department of Health do? Discuss that bill a little bit and maybe how we could replicate that.
Well, I'll mention that one and then I'll mention one other one. But yes, I mean, so much, and I am very much in favor of term limits. But one of the things that I've seen with term limits is that it does empower the state agencies. In fact, one time when I first got in here, I know of an agency head that was talking to another senator and said, you know what, you're going to be gone in 10 years. I'll still be here. I'll wait you out. And so you have these entrenched bureaucrats, even at the state level, that are not, for the most part, conservative. Most of them are big government because government is their life, right? Government is their job. And so you have these agencies that will, even if the legislature, and we've seen this in Oklahoma, gives them clear directives, they will do the exact opposite of that. And for the most part, we haven't seen people that want to rein them in, that want to pull them out, because a lot of these members are going to be term limited out and they're looking for their next gig, to stay on the government payroll of where do they want to land. And so they don't want to necessarily go after the bureaucrats. So if we as the legislature, we are the elected body, we're the elected representatives, we should be reining in that, you know, that shadow faction of that fourth branch of government, the bureaucrats, the deep state, whatever you want to call it. So we should be doing stuff like that. But we need to come up with innovative things. So because you mentioned the Department of Health, another bill that I was going to talk about or tell you, because, like you said, I've come up with some different innovative ideas over the years. One bill that I've had that I have tried to get heard and the chairman wouldn't hear it. He said it's unconstitutional. And I said, fine, hear the bill. Let me debate the constitutionality of it. Because I have everything lined out. I have the case law. I have Supreme Court opinions. I have everything.
But you can force people to wear a mask and shut down businesses. It's never a problem. But anything we want to do is unconstitutional.
Exactly. And they have no problem with violating the Constitution when it leads to their ends, and their ends justify the means. But no, one of my favorite bills that I introduced at one point or a couple of times, but still haven't gotten it through, would be to allow the state to end anchor baby citizenship. And the way I went about that is whenever a child is born in the state of Oklahoma, or take this to any other state and replicate it, right? The State Department of Health, or the entity that issues the birth certificate, on the birth certificate, the parents have to provide either proof of citizenship or proof of residency, right? And if they cannot provide that on the birth certificate, either says U.S. citizen, here in Oklahoma, I put Oklahoma citizen, I put tribal citizen because we have so many tribes here, and then I had foreign national, non-citizen. And first of all, Senate staff pushed back on me when I said I want Oklahoma citizenship on them. They're like, there's no such thing as Oklahoma citizenship. It's Oklahoma residency. And I'm like, nope, go read the Constitution again. It says that they are residents of the United States and the state, they're citizens of the United States and the state in which they reside. You have state citizenship. George Washington was a Virginian. Right. Yeah, he was a proud American, but he was a Virginian. And so I was pushing back on their narrative with that. But at the same point in time, The states are the ones that created birth certificates. That's a state power at the state level, not a federal power. And Georgia, I believe, was the first state to create that and introduce that. So if we have control of birth certificates, what we can do is we can require proof of citizenship or proof of legal residency. And if not, then we can say, I'm sorry, your child is not granted citizenship, and your birth certificate will reflect that they are a foreign national ineligible for citizenship, which does away with the anchor baby access issue. And so, yeah, okay, so they're not going to come to Oklahoma. Maybe they go into another state. But at least you've rid it of, and that's the point.
We need to solve this in red states. And I just want to point out legally, everyone's going to jump on the whole, you know, debate there. But what your point is, state and federal doesn't make a difference. In other words, if you do this, if Trump wins re-election and, you know, they have control and he promised to do this, I mean, he didn't do it last time, but let's say he does it this time, it's not like you're going to have any less of a core challenge. It's the same idea that the INA just copies and pastes the 14th Amendment. Now, the left bastardizes that to somehow mean that you can invade a country, drop a baby, and whatever that means, like subject to the jurisdiction thereof means that you could unilaterally assert jurisdiction, which is absurd. Yeah. And we believe it doesn't mean that. But the point is that so-called ambiguity of just the INA copying and pasting the language, it's going to be litigated whether you do it at the state or federal level. So your point is that however you interpret that, the genesis of that fight should really be in the states. So we're going to trigger that debate. What's the bill number so people could look that up?
I have so many bills.
I know, I'm sorry.
And it's passed the Senate deadline, so it's not moving forward unless I find a House vehicle, a House bill, to drop that language in, which I'm looking for. And so the bill number would change anyways if I can find a House bill to.
So you'll send that to me later just so we can pass it around. People could see it. Yes. I know we're almost out of time here. I want to get to just a couple things. You also have a tremendous amount of bills to interpose against federal tyranny targeting. I've seen you have had bills, you know, preventing transporting January 6th, you know, nonviolent January 6th defendants through the state. I see you have a bill allowing sheriffs to go after federal officers who confiscate guns, a bill that requires federal agents and officers to receive permission from the county sheriff before operating there, expanding the sheriff's ability to form a posse. Talk about some of this. This is good stuff.
Well, and I mean, we've seen that the federal government is not only inactive, they are actually actively working against the states and against the citizens. And so we have to be able to use our resources. Our job is to protect people's individual rights, even if that is from a hostile federal government, which is what we're seeing. I mean, the Constitution literally says that they're supposed to protect us from invasion. Not only are they not protecting us from this invasion, the federal government is facilitating it. They're doing the exact opposite of their job and their role. And so, yes, I've introduced all kinds of legislation to empower our county sheriffs, which are elected officials, elected at the local level. They're the highest ranking law enforcement officer in the state because they're actually directly elected by the people to preserve and protect those rights. And sometimes that means that they have to go against the feds that are working against them. And so one thing that we've done is like introduce legislation that if a fed is, you know, arrested for violating people's rights here in Oklahoma, they have to serve 1 year and 1 day in jail. They have to pay a fine that covers the costs of that imprisonment, because federal law says that if you spend over a year in jail, then you lose your gun rights. Okay, so if you as a fed want to come in here and try to enforce your unconstitutional laws, then we'll arrest you, we'll put you in jail for a year, we'll make you pay the fine to cover the costs for it, and then you'll lose your gun rights under federal law. So maybe you'll reconsider the authority of the federal government, you know, by doing that. And if nothing else, I mean, yeah, maybe it doesn't happen, maybe nobody is arrested, but they'll think twice before they do that when there's that possibility of it. So that's what we have to do. We have to be coming up with ways to be able to push back on the feds because they're violating the Constitution, because they're violating constitutional rights. They're literally working against the people, and it's my job to represent and protect my people's rights.
You know, one of the things, obviously, you're filibustering the budget now. I'm noticing these red state budgets are just shockingly large. Do you have a rough number on the Oklahoma budget?
Well, I mean, without Fed money and everything else, it's grown billions of dollars since I've been in office, and just 12 years. Every year, almost, we've increased it. And I've voted against pretty much every budget. There's been a few where it's been flat that I've said, okay, well, if we're keeping it flat, I can vote for it. But for the most part, I've had to vote against every single one of them because there's been a constant increase.
Final question here. I know we're going a little over time, but I think you wear a lot of hats, and this is important. So usually people like you are just, you know, kind of a backbencher. You're off to the side. But, I mean, you're long tenured there. You're termed out this term. And you also happen to be the state party chair. I've noticed an interesting trend, and I want to get your take. And this really deserves its own show, so I apologize for the lack of time. But you had, back in the day, you had no good state party chair that I knew of. And now you got Matt Rinaldi in Texas. You're in Oklahoma. We got Idaho, North Dakota. I know a bunch of states are electing good party chairs, but yet we still have just a horrible roster in the legislature and, you know, some other elected offices from Republicans in the state. Are you seeing any progress? Like, I mean, why are we seeing that dichotomy where, you know, the party officials are becoming better, but it's still not translating over to some of the elected officials?
Part of that is the party rules. For instance, here in Oklahoma, as party chairman, I'm fairly well locked in as to what I can and can't do. In other states, for instance, they actually can keep Democrats from running as Republicans. They can look at their past voting history, their past voter registration, their donation history, and they can say, no, you're a Democrat. you don't get to run under the Republican label because that's the only way you can win. And so it really just depends on each state, because each state has different party rules. I mean, we all operate in some capacity under the RNC rules, like going up to the RNC convention and everything, right? But each state has different rules. So I've looked at the other states, some of the rules that they have on different things that we could change and improve that. But truthfully, it just depends on how much power the state party chairman has under that state's party rules.
Because ultimately, we got to deal with this issue of these GOP supermajority states where Democrats just run as Republicans. And it's becoming a huge problem in a lot of these Western states. Definitely keep us up to date. Again, follow at Nathan Dom on Twitter. Keep us up to date on where this goes. And if you're able to get some of these bills through. And if not, folks, you know, again, look up Nathan Dom, Senate Bill 1199, 1200, 1201 in that order. I believe it's from last session, right? Those,
correct.
You know, interposition bills to fight back against federal tyranny. Lots of good ideas that maybe if you can't do it there, we'll try elsewhere. But keep up the good fight and definitely keep us updated.
Hey, thank you so much for everything you're doing. Keep using your voice to educate and inform people. That's part of the battle. So I appreciate you doing it.
God bless. Take care. So State Senator Nathan Dom from Tulsa, Oklahoma. By the way, you know, it's these primaries that we just sleep through, and that's why we get what we get. He did run in the primary for the last federal Senate seat. He tried to run for higher office, and I hope he does again. But we got Mark Wayne Mullen, not a very bright guy, votes for the budget bill, and you know, it is what it is. We could have gotten someone more like him. I mean, this guy is rock solid. I mean, he's like a Bill Mill guy. I mean, whatever issue you want, he has good legislation. And of course, none of them are getting votes. And this is what happens. And this is why we need Freedom Caucuses. We need to start upending their system, forcing votes, because otherwise they're just going to keep the same thing going. And we spin our wheels. We get nowhere. A lot to unpack there as well. With the state parties, I mean, it's something we need to think about as well, to just create rules that getting a good chair, getting a good executive committee, and just start disqualifying candidates. I mean, you're a Democrat. You know, you want to run the Democrat primary, that's fine. I think that's definitely something we need to do. So watch for him filibustering the agenda there as well in Oklahoma. Again, if you can't do it there, you can't do it anywhere. Folks, we got so much more going on this week. Email me at danielhurwitz@startmail.com, at RMConservative on Twitter, and please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Till tomorrow, God bless y'all, and thank you for listening.